From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. 3 days after train bombings in Madrid left 200 dead and 1,500 wounded in a shocking display of terrorism, Spaniards have voted the Socialist Party into power. Outgoing Prime Minister José María Aznar has been one of the first, had been, I should say, one of the first and few European leaders to support the U.S. invasion of Iraq, a war that 90% of the Spanish people opposed. Today, one day after his surprising victory, Spain's new Prime Minister-elect, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, said he will make good on a campaign promise to pull Spain's 1,300 coalition troops out of Iraq by June 30th, unless the U.N. takes charge there. By all appearances, a dramatic terrorist attack has just swayed the election in a major democracy. This is new. Could it happen again? Could it happen in the USA? Tonight on Point, the fallout from Spain and the politics of terror. Who won in the Spanish election? The Spanish people or the terrorists? What were the Spanish people saying no to this weekend? U.S. policy? War in Iraq? Terrorists? Their own pro-Washington government? And what lessons should the United States take away from Spain's elections in the shadow of terror? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight in Madrid with the latest developments. James Graff is Paris bureau chief for Time magazine and has been in Spain covering the deadly attacks and their aftermath. He joins us now. James, Spain's prime minister-elect had some harsh words today for President Bush and Tony Blair. What did he have to say?
He said, among other things, that they should exercise some self-criticism about the way they've pushed into Iraq, and basically suggested that there's going to be a new relationship between Spain and the United States. Cordial, he says, but clearly he wants to be part of the Europe that's been represented more by France and by Germany in the last year or so.
The war has been a disaster, he's quoted as saying. The occupation continues to be a great disaster. And what exactly is the new prime minister-elect saying about what's going to decide whether or not Spain pulls out of Iraq?
Well, he said that if there is a UN structure in place by the 1st of July, he can stay there. I mean, and in fact, I think he probably would have to, because after all, the commitment is to a kind of multilateral approach. And if, in fact, the UN were to approve the regime or the method of governing Iraq after July, then I don't think we necessarily see the Spanish troops removed. Now, the Spanish troops themselves are something like 1% of the force. They're not militarily particularly important. Their importance for George Bush and for the coalition has always been political, because this meant this is another major country that was in there with Tony Blair and George Bush. So that's the real, it's the political fallout rather than the military stuff that's important, I think.
Is it possible, James, that what the United States is already hoping to see unfold in June and July, that is, a handover of sovereignty to Iraqis, some kind of UN blessing of that might be enough to keep Spanish troops there? Or is the sense in Spain that there's a much higher bar than that and they're probably headed home?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to watch that. Very good question. You know, there was a time when the socialists got in power in 1982. There were a lot within the Socialist Party that wanted Spain to pull out of NATO entirely. And the way the government then finessed the great pressure from the left to do just was to call a referendum instead. It then won the referendum, that is, to stay in NATO, and became, even under the socialists, a mainstay, really, of NATO. So it's a little bit difficult to judge. I think it may turn out that Zapatero figures that it's not quite as easy to just pull out as he might think it is, and that he's going to have to convince the people of whatever he does. He's going to have to do some serious political convincing either way.
James, you are there in Madrid. Just how big an upset was the weekend's election of this socialist prime minister-elect Zapatero? Aznar was, by the polls, predicted to stay in power, was he not?
He was. I mean, his lead was already diminishing. It's important to remember that. Now, and polls are a very inexact science here as everywhere. There was momentum, I think, even before the terrorist attacks for Zapatero to win. What happened, I think, in this election is that the people that would have abstained because they didn't think there was any point and it was clear the PP was going to, the Popular Party was going to win, when the attacks happened, and particularly, and it's important to notice, it wasn't just the attacks, it was also the way the government reacted to them and continued to press the theory that it was ETA, that the Ba'ath terrorists that had done it. Of course, that's everybody's natural and proper assumption when a bomb goes off in Spain. But as the evidence began to mount, both outside the country and in police procedures that they discovered a van with tapes in it, et cetera, the government stuck with its ETA line, and that it's not the only reason, but that was certainly a substantial other reason for the big turnout and the rejection of Aznar. So I think this is primarily a rejection of Aznar, certainly the fact is, unfortunately and tragically, the Al-Qaeda did manage to reintroduce this issue of a very unpopular war into an electoral campaign where it was largely absent.
James, is there any more evidence today in Spain of who was responsible for last Thursday's bombing?
Well, we're getting to learn more about these Moroccans, particularly one of them, Zagum, who allegedly, according to both Moroccan and Spanish authorities, has some ties to an Al-Qaeda ring that was here in Spain after September 11th, and in particular to the bombings in Casablanca, Morocco, last May. So we're beginning to see a lot of connections being made. I think we'll see more and more of them in the next few days, connecting this perhaps to Saudi operatives, to a network that might very well have been in place here before, and to people that left Morocco after the Casablanca bombings, which were, incidentally, suicide bombings, unlike this one, and may have set up a network or hooked up to a network here in Spain. So it looks like it's going to be a very, very revealing, actually, look at what Al-Qaeda is now, to see exactly who was involved in this. And it'll be a very, very tough police and intelligence matter to figure it out.
And finally, James Graff, you cover much of Europe. How do you expect that this weekend's vote in Spain, its rejection of the U.S. ally Aznar, is going to be interpreted across the continent?
Well, certainly it's got to worry the Poles, it's got to worry the Italians, and it's got to worry the Brits in particular, because those are the places that have supported America. But I don't think that the French and the Germans can let their guard down at all. We can't assume too much about what we know about Al-Qaeda. We're all infidels and a threat. And the fact, just today I saw that one of the French generals, said that the French had come very close to capturing bin Laden in Afghanistan. Well, if they had, then we might very well have seen an attack in France. So I don't think anybody, whether you're for or against the war in Iraq, can let their guard down on Al-Qaeda. It could happen anywhere. This was an effective attack, but not necessarily one that we can impute too much intention to, maybe.
But a very bloody one, and perhaps a politically consequential one. James Graff, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
James Graff is covering the Madrid bombing for Time magazine. He spoke with us from Madrid. Joining me now in the studio is Jessica Stern, lecturer in public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Her latest book is Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. Jessica, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guest.
Jessica Stern, you've been watching on, as we all have, from the United States, watching everything unfold in Madrid since the big bombing last Thursday. 200 dead, 1,500 plus wounded, many of them grievously wounded. What's your interpretation of the politics of this attack? The timing, 2 days before a general election to choose a prime minister in Spain, the expected choice has not unfolded there. They've got now a Spanish prime minister who is very tough today on the United States, saying the war is a disaster, saying it hasn't generated anything but more violence and hate. Is this a deliberate terrorist intervention in an electoral process?
Well, it seems that has to have been part of this terrorist organization's objective. I mean, it's a little bit too coincidental not to assume that. At the same time, it was also 2.5 years after September 11th. It seems that there were a number of reasons why this organization might have chosen the date March 11th. Including the possibility of influencing an election and including the possibility of persuading the next government to get out of Iraq.
So you have paid a lot of attention to terrorists and their internal motivations. Have you looked also at
at the impact of terrorism on the target, the political impact. This is like beating a kind of gong here. I mean, Aznar is out of power today. That's a big message to politicians, presumably to other countries. Do you think that, this is or could be part of a global strategy to divide and conquer, to strip Washington of allies? Is it too much to attribute that to a terrorist mind at work here?
I certainly think that al-Qaeda would like to strip Washington of its allies. There's no question about that. I don't think that al-Qaeda or related groups could hope to have an influence on elections in the way they perhaps succeeded in Spain as a rule. In fact, it could very well go the other way. If there were a major attack in the United States, it's not at all clear that it would influence Americans to push the Bush administration out and allow Mr. Kerry to have at al-Qaeda for a change.
Jack, you've been looking on with us as well. Washington had predicted, Bush administration officials had predicted, that a terrorist attack in Europe would drive Europe toward the American position. It clearly hasn't happened in the particular instance of the Spanish prime minister, but could it still happen more broadly, or are we headed the other way?
Well, it certainly could still happen more broadly, but, you know, when you look at this attack, and if I'm not mistaken, it was 911 days after September 11th, what strikes me about the aftermath is the appearance of what Jonathan Schell on our program called the unconquerable world, the world of public opinion that appeared in reaction against the war against Iraq. And we heard from that world with the Spanish public. We knew when Spain went into the war that something like 90% of the people were against it. The Spanish government took a calculated risk, doubtless on the argument that the security of Spain was at risk from Saddam. Well, that seems not to have been true. There was no weapons of mass destruction found there. And far from increasing the security of Spain, this seems to have weakened Spain. So the unconquerable world, the public, has been heard from. And this is the first election anywhere in any of these countries since the war on Iraq. And it sort of hangs in the air, the question whether other publics will feel similarly about this war.
But, Jack, is it possible that the public here was conquered by fear of terrorism? Or you're saying this was the Spanish populace saying, whatever the old prime minister's done, we don't favor this war, and we're going to vote against this alliance, this particular alliance in any case, with Washington?
That's the way I see it. Now, of course, fear could get into it as well, but I do see that even the current the prime minister-elect is saying, no, we're going to continue with the war on terror. We're certainly going to cooperate in that and be vigilant in that, but we're not going to go along with Iraq.
Jessica Stern, how do you expect that the terrorist eye will interpret the Spanish vote? Will they say, oh, hey, we can sway electoral outcomes in big democracies. Let's do more of this.
Well, I think this is actually undoubtedly very exciting to al-Qaeda and its sympathizers. I think it's important to remember that this is an organization that doesn't have clear goals as much as it does the desire to frighten us and make us overreact more than anything else. And when we start focusing on particular objectives, for example, forcing U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia, and imagine that the group that al-Qaeda will be satisfied once that objective is achieved, or influencing elections, I think we're missing something very important, which is that this is a pragmatic group that seeks to take revenge on us and destroy what it calls the New World Order. And I agree with the reporter, the Time Magazine mm-hmm. reporter, who says that no one should feel immune from this in Europe. France and Germany should not feel immune.
And al-Qaeda may not have specific goals, but those are pretty big goals you've just outlined.
Indeed.
And if
Indeed.
They were involved here, the timing was very, very deliberate, it would seem. Jessica Stern and Jack Beattie, please stand by. We're talking tonight about the fallout in Spain and the politics of terror. How do you interpret Spain's democratic rejection of U.S. allies in Madrid? How would a pre-election terrorist attack play out in American politics? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the fallout from Spain and the politics of terror. You can join our conversation tonight. Who won in the Spanish election this weekend? The Spanish people? Al-Qaeda? And does Washington come out anything but a loser here? How do you interpret Spain's democratic rejection of U.S. allies in Madrid? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With me in the studio tonight, Jessica Stern. She's lecturer in public policy and a faculty affiliate at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. She's author of Terror in the Name of God. Joining us right now from Washington is Anatole Levin. He's senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a journalist, writer, and historian. Good evening and welcome, Anatole Levin.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us. Anatole Levin, how do you expect that this quick sequence of events, terror in Madrid and the surprising electoral outcome in Spain, will echo around Europe?
Well, I think it will certainly be extremely worrying to key American allies in Europe, as we've already heard, and I think it will make governments in future extremely wary about supporting American policies which are opposed by a majority of their populations. In fact, I think it will be almost impossible for governments to do that after this. But as we've also heard, European populations remain committed to the struggle against Al-Qaeda. I mean, part of the opposition to the war with Iraq was based in a belief, and in my view, a well-founded belief, that it would actually be bad for the war against terrorism, that it would weaken that struggle. And, you know, we haven't seen European public swinging against NATO involvement in Afghanistan, for example, because that involvement is seen as legitimate. I mean, that was seen as a war of genuine self-defense after a genuine attack on America.
There's no question that Prime Minister-elect Zapatero has been very critical already. He said today that the war in Iraq, the invasion, hasn't generated anything but more violence and hate. He went on to say, you can't organize a war on the basis of lies. You can't bomb a people just in case. Even if this is only a rejection of U.S. Actions in Iraq and not of a broader effort against terrorism, doesn't that put Spain and the rest of Europe on quite a different track, given Washington's emphasis on the effort in Iraq?
Well, yes, it does. It puts them on a very different track from the Bush administration. But, you know, we've seen actually the wider policies of the Bush administration itself change quite radically over the past 9 months or so. And that could be even more true, of course, of future U.S. administrations. So it could be that America or an American administration will be somewhat chastened by this and by other events, and, of course, simply by the mess in post-war Iraq, and that, you know, we will not see more moves coming from Washington that would be likely radically to worsen relations between the U.S. and Western Europe.
And Anatole Levin, how about the impact of Thursday's terrorism on this vote? You know, the first readings here are that it was a very significant. We heard from James Graff that opposition to the government of Prime Minister Aznar was already growing, but the view there that the terrorist attacks brought out more supporters of the Socialist Party than might have come out otherwise, enough to tilt the vote. Are the bombings on Thursday being seen as having been definitive in this election, or, you know, just one among a number of tipping factors?
I'd say they were only one factor, but undoubtedly the most important. I mean, another factor, as we've heard, was the way in which the government handled the aftermath of the bombings and the attempt to pin the blame on ETA. If they hadn't done that, I mean, if they had immediately said, look, it does look most likely that Al-Qaeda were responsible, it could be. I don't know whether they would have won, but I think they would have kept a higher proportion of the vote. Because, I mean, let's face it, it does bring home to Europeans that there are very grave risks involved in supporting America. Now, that doesn't mean that Europeans will back away from America in what they see as a legitimate struggle, as in Afghanistan. But of course it's going to mean that Europeans will be much more doubtful about giving support to America in a war which they don't regard as legitimate.
And we should dissect this issue of the Spanish government first pinning it so hard on ETA. I guess the the way that's being interpreted is that the population thought that that was a kind of manipulation, that that would play into Prime Minister Aznar's hands, and then therefore he was trying to use this incident to drive voters to the polls in his favor, whereas al-Qaeda made him look less heroic in as much as it looked like he may have drawn this attack through his alliance with Washington. Is that it?
Well, yes, I mean, that is it. But also, from what I gather, there was a feeling that, you know, the government was not quite exploiting the attacks, but at least, in a sense, trying to twist them, and that this was a very indecent thing to have done, given the scale of the tragedy. So I think that played a part as well.
Jessica Stern, as you look at the alliances that the Bush administration has made around the world in the war on terror as it has defined it, which includes this huge Iraq piece, do you imagine that other allies of the United States could find themselves in for the same kind of treatment? I mean, it's so speculative, but do we now have to consider that Japan or Poland or Italy are on a kind of list, or will become an attractive list?
Well, I'm not really prepared to speculate about that. I do think that if there's a lesson here, it's that perhaps it's very, very important not to ignore publics. And this is a mistake that the people below the level of the state, and this is a mistake I think the Bush administration has made, and we are now suffering the consequences. And that includes, of course, what has happened in Spain, but it's also the level of antipathy that we're seeing in publics among our Muslim allies. And it's extremely dangerous when you see that the level of support for the United States in Indonesia, for example, an ally is now around 15%. That is very, very troubling. Yes. And it went down quite rapidly from over 60% within a year down below to 15%. And I think we need to think about this, not to think about how we are perceived by the public in various among our allies, the publics of, you know, of our allies.
Right. Jack Beatty, there's a kind of a seconding of your idea, Jonathan Schell's idea, that you better have the people on your side, at least in your allies' electorates, or ultimately that things are going to turn against you.
Yes, it's really a very practical idea. I mean, Senator Chuck Hagel, the Nebraska Republican, was saying just that on television today. He said, you know, if going into this we had had UN approval, the Spanish public would have seen this as the world's cause. And it wouldn't have, you know, they would have, the government would have, the party, governing party would have sustained this shock. So it actually helps to get that kind of approval. Of course, that begs the question whether we would have got it. I don't think we would have on those terms. But, you know, this does, again, show that everything touching on diplomacy with Iraq, as opposed to just the sheer military part of it, has failed for this administration, failed going in, failed coming out, and now in the aftermath, another country that has touched it and been identified with it has paid the price.
Jessica?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's probably not a good idea to start wars that violate UN prescriptions. But in addition to that, I think it's very important to take into account what motivation would sway the public, our allies, and that includes describing this war as a way to save the Iraqi people from a vicious dictator rather than describing it as a war that was important for our overall approach to fighting terrorism.
But, of course, it's subsequently been described that way very loudly and repeatedly by the Bush administration.
Yes, but by then it was too late. And I think had it been described that way from the very beginning, we might have achieved a very different result with our allies. And had the Bush administration taken diplomacy more seriously, perhaps they would have thought about that.
Jessica, Anatole, Levin, Jack Beatty, stand by. I want to invite our callers in. Ingolf is calling from Mukwonago, Wisconsin. Hi, Ingolf, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I think basically Bush has the right instinct about the war on terrorism, but I think the problem that he's run into with particularly the European allies is besides the obvious Iraq debacle, I think it's really his manner, and it's been pointed out often by his opponents, but Democratic opponents. It's, I think, the arrogant manner, the sneering manner, particularly if we throw in Rumsfeld here, how he talks about the old Europe seems to be an innocent remark, but it really isn't. It's quite an insult, I think, in many ways, if you look a little deeper down what they really mean by that expression. They mean the irrelevant Europe, and to throw France along with Germany and many other nations into the category of irrelevant nations.
Ingolf, let me ask you then. You seem to suggest that this has nothing to do with the Thursday terrorist attack, that Europeans, or in this case Spaniards, were already offended and ready to vote against the Bush ally.
Yeah, I think, I mean, besides Israel, I don't think there was any other country where there was a popular majority for the war, where people actually supported it. There were some relatively, I guess, brave governments that decided to fight with the United States. Certainly Afghanistan had a much broader support, but then even in Iraq, I think the problem started with Iraq and then got worse and worse when this attitude, this arrogant, sneering, well, gung-ho, cowboy, whatever you want to call it, attitude that Bush has about himself started appearing.
This impression of arrogance and maybe that leaving the Bush administration, the U.S. vulnerable. Anatole Levin, is it still as strong as ever? Colin Powell and others this weekend saying, you know, be careful, Europe, don't surrender. Even Joe Lieberman comparing kind of the Spaniards to a kind of Neville Chamberlain appeasement of terrorists with their vote.
Yes, well, I mean, that's very counterproductive, you know, because once again, it is an insult. And it's also not an insult that you deliver to a people who've just suffered as badly as the Spaniards. But I have to say, I mean, it's not just a question of style. The thing is that the Bush administration, you know, even before 9/11, had done a range of things over the Kyoto Treaty, over the International Criminal Court, over the ABM Treaty, over a whole range of international issues, which many Europeans take very, very seriously. The Bush administration had adopted a unilateral position, which simply displayed contempt, not just for European views, but also for European interests. Now, I mean, this is diplomacy 101. Mm. If you behave in this way in one field, let alone 10 fields, then you're going to pay a price elsewhere. So, you know, I think that a future American administration needs to think very seriously, not just about the war against terrorism and how to keep allies there, but also, you know, how to behave across a range of policies in a way that will make America once again a leader by consent and not a sort of unilateral dictator, because America just isn't strong enough to be a unilateral dictator.
Jessica Stern, do you see a kind of popular wisdom in this Spanish vote saying if it's a vote against the invasion of Iraq, even in the context of fighting terror, do you see wisdom there or do you see a kind of retreat and this appeasement line, or as Donald Rumsfeld put it always colorfully, that this is a kind of like feeding an alligator, he said, you know, suggesting that you sort of give it some meat in the hopes that it won't eat you. He says it's not a terribly proud posture. Does this vote help in combating terrorism or not?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think it does help in combating terrorism. I certainly did not support the war in Iraq. I thought it was a grave mistake, most particularly because of the way we went about it by displaying, as the caller said, a great deal of contempt for our allies, ignoring their concerns, ignoring the views of publics around the world, ignoring concerns within the Islamic world, the feeling that we were out to humiliate the Islamic world. I think Iraq truly has become a haven for terrorists. That was clear very early on. It becomes more and more clear every day. Nonetheless, I do not believe that this vote, this demand, that the decision for Spain to leave as a result of this vote, I don't think that's good for the war on terrorism. I think it could. Well, I think it could be perceived by Al Qaeda and its sympathizers as a victory, even if it isn't actually going to have a big impact on how they are treated in Europe or in Spain in particular.
Alejandro is calling from Milford, Massachusetts. Hi, Alejandro. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, thanks.
I'm a Spanish national. I have been living here in the United States for 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm actually from Madrid. I'd just like to make the point. I know one of your speakers already touched on it.
Okay.
I think really the Spanish vote, what it really did is for the people to take power back from the politicians that were trying to lie to them. When the Partido Popular came on Thursday and said very strongly that ETA was the
responsible.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And the people felt, especially on Friday and on Saturday, they were demonstrating against Partido Popular all over Spain.
The Conservative Party, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They thought that they were light. And I think this is not a vote against the war in Iraq specifically. Obviously, there was a huge population that didn't want to go to the war. But most, the way I take it is, they are punishing the Partido Popular for lying to them.
And and that party is now out of power. Alejandro, thanks for that call. Anatole Levin, here we have maybe a dilemma. Jessica Stern says, in purely terrorism-fighting terms, this may not be the best message to send Al-Qaeda. On the other hand, Alejandro and other Spaniards are saying people stood up and rejected a government they perceived had lied to them.
Well yes. I would have to agree with Jessica in terms of the effect on the war against terrorism. But, you know, as we had heard already, it is a lesson to governments and a lesson to the U.S. administration above all that you do have to pay attention to what the people of a country think. I mean, we are supposed, after all, to be democracies. And the U.S., of course, is supposed to be spreading democracy, including, most of all, it's trying to spread democracy to the Muslim world. Well, you know, as many people pointed out, with regard to Turkey and other countries in the run-up to the war, it's a pretty strange program that on the one hand says that it wants to spread democracy in the world, and yet on the other hand, once again, displays overt contempt for the opinions of great majorities of democratic voters. And you're just not going to be able to get away with that in the long run, whether you're the Spanish government, the British government, or the American government. So I have to agree, you know, with both points. It's not good, but it is in a certain sense inevitable.
Anatole Levin, Jessica Stern, Jack Beattie, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the fallout in Spain and the politics of terror. Does the Spanish vote say international terrorists have free rein to scare off Bush administration allies? And what were the Spanish people saying no to this weekend? To U.S. leadership, to war on Iraq, to war on terror, to lies? Are the Spanish getting weak-kneed in confronting terrorism or just insisting on a different path? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the fallout from Spain and the politics of terror. You can join the conversation. How would a pre-election terrorist attack play out in American politics? Can Al-Qaeda now pick winners and losers in global elections? And what should the United States learn from what has just happened in Spain? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight, Jessica Stern, author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. Joining us from Washington, Anatole Levin, senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Jack Beattie is with us as well. And Ed is calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm really concerned that we're basically setting ourselves up for the exact same scenario that just happened in Spain, and that with all the political turmoil in the run up to the election about the Iraq, our involvement in Iraq, and quite frankly, I think what plays out in Iraq between now and the elections relatively irrelevant to the Al-Qaeda people. they're going to use the election to try to sway the American people, and I think it'll backfire. And what my concern is I think that the American people, another attack on our soil, it will there'll be such a groundswell of anger towards Al Qaeda that it'll. But I think that the last time that this happened, that it was directed at Al Qaeda, and we were very careful not to get all the Muslim people, not to direct that anger at the Muslim people in general,
right?
But just at Al Qaeda. But I'm afraid that another attack like this, especially if it's aimed at throwing our elections.
Yep.
I think that it'll spill out over onto the Muslim people, and I don't know where that'll go.
Ed, let us pick that up, but let me ask you one question, Ed. If that should happen in the U.S. in advance of November's presidential elections, who do you think it would help?
I think it would almost ensure George Bush's victory. I think even if George Bush was 20 points down in the poll, that the war in Iraq was going terrible, that we were looking like we were going to cut and run, that it was just really looking bad, and we weren't making any more progress in Afghanistan.
Yep. It could still spin it that way, you think. It's a great point, and thanks very much for raising it. Jessica Stern, it's you can't help but feel this possibility. And the fact that there has not been a terrorist attack or an al-Qaeda attack certainly doesn't mean that there can't be. There could well be one before November. In the way that you think about terrorism, are you handicapping the odds of that? Are you thinking the odds are high, low? And what about the impact on an American election?
Well, I think we've very obviously and very publicly made a major push now to find bin Laden and try to capture the remaining leadership and really shut down the operation Waziristan, Pakistan, Afghanistan. Mm. And it's undoubtedly in Al-Qaeda's fondest dream is to push back very hard against us. And I think they'd very much like to do that. I think we need to be careful about assuming that Al-Qaeda's objective is going to be to influence elections. Indeed, as the caller points out, it's quite likely if they were to attack us, it would not topple the present regime.
It's hard to talk about this without getting way too speculative, but yet you think about how they think a lot. Would Al-Qaeda have an interest in an attack on the U.S. before the elections that kept George Bush in power? Would that somehow suit them or not?
No, I don't think that keeping George Bush in power suits them particularly, although I don't think it makes that big a difference to them. I think what matters more than anything is destroying the so-called New World Order, making us feel fearful, destroying our economy, and so on. Those are the things that are most important. No one particular political objective matters to them, in my view.
Jack Beatty, it's a terrible scenario. Let us all pray and knock wood that it doesn't happen. But if it should, how does it play out?
Well, I'm inclined to agree that it would help Bush, but then you have to posit some circumstances. Suppose it was an attack at a port where we know, because of lobbying from interest groups, the administration has not required these containers to be inspected. Suppose it were an attack at a chemical plant, which we know from lobbying the administration has not seen fit to have to tax them to protect. Suppose it were an attack on a nuclear plant, again lobbying, they haven't seen fit to protect that. So that kind of thing, I could imagine the public getting outraged about that this was a clear danger. The administration, because it put private interests above the interests of the security, didn't act, and we paid for it.
Anatole Levin, Democratic nominee, presumed at this point, John Kerry, went on the offensive today over Madrid and the Spanish bombing against George Bush, saying that it's an indication that his policies have been ineffective. Of course, the Bush administration was out in strength all weekend saying it's just the opposite. It shows that you've got to push back and push back hard. But as an observer there in Washington, how do you imagine an attack? Again, heaven forfend, but if it should happen, how might it play out in U.S. politics?
Well, in U.S. domestic politics, to be honest, I just don't know. We've heard, you know, both sides argued who would benefit. But I would like to say one thing, just following on from something that Jessica said about Al-Qaeda not necessarily having specific objectives. I do believe that it is very much in Al-Qaeda's interest, and I think that they know this, to get America to invade and occupy more bits of the Muslim world. I do think that the occupation of Iraq has been a very considerable success for them. And the more they can embroil the U.S. in such operations, thereby generating more and more anger, more and more recruits from among Muslims, I think that that would be a very considerable triumph for them. And we also have to hope, therefore, that any U.S. response, as indeed the caller suggested, would be, you know, calibrated the way that it was immediately after 9/11, and not more general.
Tim is calling from Pepperell, Massachusetts. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
I'm somewhat appalled at some of what I hear. I just listened to Jack Beatty talk about, you know, the President Bush's dereliction in not securing the harbors and this and that. And, you know, it's just not that simple. You don't just stop everything and turn everything around on a dime. And the comments about that what's happened in Spain is actually somewhat of a victory for the terrorist, then it would seem to make sense to me that, gee, when is the rest of the world going to make up their mind that they're going to confront this issue, then be reactive to it, which seems to be the one thing the United States is doing, but on the same hand being criticized as arrogant and this and that about the way they didn't do it. France and Germany and the powers to be in Europe did not go into the war in Iraq or support it because they had pipelines and contracts, et cetera. And they're always going to vote for their interests, and that's very well understood. But I'm tired of hearing the criticism of the United States protecting their interests and confronting what is clearly evil, and then just being, well, but they're being arrogant about it.
Tim, let me ask you, if I may, Tim, what do you make then of the 90% Spanish opposition to the war in Iraq and to the vote today which kicked out the U.S. allies? How do you interpret what the Spanish public is saying there?
You know what? The Spanish public is saying what they feel is best for Spain, and God bless them. All right, but they may at the same time, you know, they're going to have to deal with the fact that terrorism has struck them, and they're still going to have to deal with that, both within their country and how the rest of the world is going to approach it.
Yep.
I can't speak for the Spanish people, but I they did what they feel is best for them, and you know what, I have to respect that. Let's not then take that, turn around and say, well, that's just one more people, and, you know, and that the allies falling by the wayside. It seems to me that the world has to, at some point, make up their mind. Are we going to deal with people like Saddam Hussein? Are we going to deal with people like Al-Qaeda? Or are we going to talk about the arrogant ways that the United States is going about it?
Tim, we've got it, and thank you very much for your call. Anatole Levin, how about it? Is there a point at which Europe might be so provoked that it would close ranks behind an approach like President Bush's, or is that just not going to happen?
Well, I think it very much depends on U.S. policies and the context in which attacks happen. I mean, just to say once again, Europe supported the war in Afghanistan. The NATO countries immediately after 9/11 declared war, essentially, on the side of the U.S. Britain offered 25,000 troops. France offered troops. These offers at that time were turned down by the Bush administration because they preferred, or they thought that they preferred at that time, to do Afghanistan on their own. Later, of course, they had to change their minds. So as long as this war can be kept a war against Al-Qaeda and its allies, then you will have European support. But the problem you see is that there is a great lack of confidence now in Europe in American leadership in the war against terrorism. Now, that is mainly because of what the Bush administration has done, but it does, I must say, also have a lot to do with what is seen in Europe as unconditional American support for Israel, which is overwhelmingly seen, even by the British government, as fueling terrorism and making a political struggle against terrorism much more difficult.
Anatole, even with that, we've got to wrap it up. But thanks very much for being with us tonight. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
Anatole Levin, Senior Associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Jessica Stern, so many pieces to this. Thank you for helping us put a few of them together tonight. Thanks very much for being with us. Jessica Stern from the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. And Jack Beattie, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Hillary Clinton on a domestic need being overlooked in the age of terror. This is On Point. As the world came to grips with the reality of last week's terrorist attack in Madrid, Senator Hillary Clinton was speaking out against another reality this weekend, poverty. Speaking at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston, Senator Clinton told her office that even in an age of terrorism, the weakest members of society must be protected. Here's an excerpt from her address.
Robert Kennedy said in Athens, Georgia, on May 6, 1961, "I believe that as long as there is plenty, poverty is evil." We've heard a lot of talk about evil in the last 2 years, and we've seen its face in a very close and personal way. There is no possible explanation for the kind of terrorism that we experienced here in our own country and which has taken so many lives around the world, most recently in Madrid. So, yes, we do have to face the reality of evil. But there is another kind of evil that I think Robert Kennedy was referring to, and that is the indifference and the apathy to those in our very midst who are being denied and oppressed right before our eyes. Now, we have made enormous progress in many respects when it comes to poverty, its amelioration, and creating ladders of opportunity for all of our children. But as we meet in this beautiful library, we have to acknowledge that we've come a distance from those days and words in the early 1960s, but can we honestly say we have met the goal that President Kennedy set for us? One out of every five of our children born today will live in poverty. I still believe that we can't eliminate poverty, but we can limit it, and we can provide opportunities for people. And our failure to do so says quite a bit about how we see ourselves as a nation today. President Kennedy called a generation of Americans to service. He inspired countless people, not only here, but around the world. And he did so because he embodied the American spirit of true compassion, of optimism, of positive energy put to work to solve problems. If you listen to what comes out of Washington at the highest levels today, it is more about fear, and it is more about fatalism, and it is not that same clarion call to action that has always motivated our nation.
Democratic Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton speaking at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston on Sunday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.